You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
Hey, hey, everybody. This is SecureJabber.com. This is Dave Glenn, joined tonight by
Matt Thompson,
Dan Gregory.
And special guest host,
Michael Scalfani.
And special, 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 special guest,
Rachel Snyder.
Rachel Snyder has over 20 years in information technology. Believe it or not, she does not look old enough to have 20 years in IT. 15 of those have been in information security, specializing in managing security and IT operations in a regulatory compliance environment. Confidentiality, integrity, and availability are the standard. That is the triangle of power.
It's a long way of saying she's really good at security.
Yeah. Rachel's, as I said earlier, Rachel is a hovering mystic guru of all things information security.
And I denied it.
And we bow to her superior intellect and experience. We've already bowed a couple of times on this podcast, actually. Wow. No, I'm being serious. So guys, in this episode, segment, what do you call this?
Segment two of episode 31.
In segment two of episode 31, which we have handily broken up into smaller segments so that you can download them to your heart's content and listen to the things that matter to you.
Or just
most.
Download them.
Wait, I was like on a roll there. I was like talking about stuff and engaging with our listenership. Do we have a listenership? It's a ship of listeners. Anyway,
it's a boat.
They can all fit on
a small dinghy.
Yeah, they can all fit in a boat together.
Dinghy.
We could do a cruise.
The Zodiac, the small rubber Zodiac floated across the ocean.
We could rent a pontoon and could do a live show for every listener
fantastic.
That we have.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Let's honestly, that's a really, really good idea. Like
what
right
could go
now,
wrong?
Like right now, we should do a river cruise on a pontoon boat right now in the Detroit River.
Just,
we could like go sturgeon fishing off
that?
Of a
can
pontoon
we get
boat.
How's
have
electronics
with that.
Handle with that?
You're not coming?
I'm going to go with no because electronics and water do not mix.
Just, I'm very disappointed.
Not on a pontoon. Like we could probably do it in something that had a cuddy cabin.
Cuddy cabin.
Yeah.
I like that.
Like a boat.
Like a houseboat? Like a boat?
Yeah. Like a boat with a cuddy cabin.
Like a boat?
Like all a right. boat.
DJ Days.
I'm on a boat.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah, no.
Sorry.
I'm on a boat, yo.
So I'm on a boat, yo. All right. So PCI DSS. PCI is the payment card industry DSS data security standard. So this is where a bunch of people got together, merchants and card issuers, Visa, MasterCard, and created this data security standard for PCI, payment card industry. So tonight we want to talk about PCI compliance, what's new, new businesses, areas of operations affected, using PCI compliance guidelines as a framework, looking at PCI and assessing compliance with that. There's a lot of misnomers and sort of distracting information about this, but then remediating and continuing compliance. The fact of the matter is what happened is the payment card industry, card issuers got together and realized that there's a lot of personally identifiable information or PII that's out there, that was not being protected properly. So this is a standard like many others. So, you know, if you think about Sarbanes-Oxley and FFIEC and NCUA and HIPAA and HITECH and HITRUST, all this alphabet soup of acronyms, PCI is actually something that really impacts across industry. If you accept credit cards, you are liable for and required to be compliant with PCI. There aren't a lot of organizations that don't accept credit cards. So, there are various levels of PCI that you can comply with. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. So, Rachel and Dan, Matt told me you guys are smarter than me. So I'm going to flip things over to you guys. Talk. So I gave my layman's 30 billion foot view of PCI. Talk to us about PCI. What is it? Why is it important?
Well, Rachel, ladies first.
Well, I was going to say, especially this time of year with it being, you know, shopping season.
It's perfect time of year.
It's a good time for us to actually be talking about this a little bit.
We're far away from here. Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't know, Dan, why don't you why don't you get us started on
I think a good place to start is like what Dave said is it's not as applicable. Well, it is applicable to a lot of things, but knowing if it applies to you as an organization or not, and then if it does, to what level. And a lot of people just default to how many transactions per year. That's not the only standard. In fact, that's one of very, very many. A lot of people go to it because it's the easiest one to remember, and perhaps maybe it gets fanfare because the numbers tend to be higher, and everybody wants to talk about the thing that's, you know, a little bit more dramatic and bigger. But there's some nuances to it. Are you merchant of record? Do you own your own processing ID? Do you store the actual data itself that would be under the, you know, the PCIDSS compliance standard? There's a lot of different things you got to look at as an organization, first of all, to determine what level merchant you are. So,
but everybody has to comply now to PCI, correct? If you take credit cards, you have to have some level of compliance with PCI.
Not necessarily. And that's actually exactly what I'm getting at. So if I'm a merchant, right? Let's say I sell something, right? And I've got a product. And I don't want to deal with PCI at all. In fact, I just had this conversation with a customer a couple of days ago where they don't want to be beholden to any of the laws, regulations, or compliance standards that come along with PCI because it is a heavy burden. And it's a resource burden, and there's costs associated with, you know, certifying your network and everything else and working with auditors, et cetera, et cetera. They wanted to remove themselves from that food chain, as it were, completely. They provide the front end, right? You can go to their website. You think they're on their website. You're not. You're on a third party's website. They own the website. They own the transaction. They own the transference of data as it applies to PCI DSS standards. They accept the credit card. They process it on the back end with one of the actual credit card holders or companies or all of them. And then they then issue a ticket, which is a random, not a random number, but it's basically the transaction ID or confirmation of what it is they bought and how much of each thing that they bought. And they send that to me, the company that makes the stuff. And then I ship it to them. And I deal with logistics and everything on the back end with my other third-party providers for shipping and boxing and whatever else it is. I don't ever come in contact with the credit card. I don't handle that transaction or any of the data. I don't store the data. I don't need it. I don't want it by design. So me, the company, even though I do get the money at the end of the day, I don't have to comply to any of the PCI standards. Okay. I'm not the merchant of record. I might not even own my own merchant ID. Okay. So I've outsourced that. There are companies and organizations in an entire industry that have evolved to do just that. Like, hey, we'll take on the burden for you guys. We'll process all your transactions and all your credit cards and be your quote unquote shopping cart in the upper right hand corner of your website or whatever it
is.
But
that would only apply to like digital. If you swipe a credit card, you're processing a credit card.
Sort of.
Go ahead.
Well,
Rachel,
I was going to say there are some vendors out there that are being really savvy in that space. And in fact, they are the outsourcer, if you will, which is what, you know, Dan's talking about from an IT perspective. They're actually outsourcing even in the store swiping, you know, at that terminal. So there are solutions out there that can basically, you know, cover you end to end without you really even having to worry too much about it. Although there is, to some extent, you always have to do certain things like, you know, some training with your employees and that type of.
Would using PayPal be one of those methods where they give you the chip scanner?
Yeah, and Square. Yep, exactly. And in fact, if you go to Square's website, they even talk directly about you don't have to do PCI compliance. We do it for you, you know. So, yeah, there are solutions out there for, you know, many companies that can, you know, find the, you know, lower end of the checklist, if you will, on things they have to do.
When you think about Square, am I wrong here? Is it important to understand if you accept credit cards in any way, form, or function, if you keep a copy of the credit card, you are liable for PCI compliance?
I think it's really important for us all, although it's really easy, I think, for most people to understand, even down to the small business level, that they're, you know, how would you want somebody to handle your credit card that you would be handing over, right?
Yeah, good call.
So, you know, it's really one of those things. I hear a lot of times people saying to me, you know, I don't want to do that, or I don't, you know, maybe I don't want to do this, or what have you. And it's like, well, what if I said that to you when you were handing me your credit card?
Right.
Not so, you know, you might snatch that sucker back, right?
And no, run I don't away. Think so.
So, yeah, I mean, it's, right. I think at least it's a real thing that we can all relate to. to some extent.
You come in contact with it every day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So so I think on the other side, I think that a lot of, you know, merchants who are basically, you know, your shop owners or any of, you know, anybody that's basically you're purchasing something on really recognize how they would want to be treated too. So I think the awareness hasn't just been because of, you know, breaches that have existed in the industry.
Right. Not to oversimplify, but I love your golden rule approach to PCI compliance. You know, it's do unto others as you would have them do to you,
right?
Sure.
I mean, absolutely. Yeah. No.
That's kind of interesting.
No, it's absolutely. And well, and we all know that in security too, typically your weakness is going to be your people, right? So when you start relating things back to their own, you know, personal, you know, things and of course finances, right, then it becomes all of a sudden some more light bulb moments.
That's really good advice, Rachel. I don't think everybody that I talk to about PCI compliance, they kind of roll their eyes and they're like, PCI, whatever. And especially in the SMB, people are like, I have no idea why they're making me go through this crazy nuttiness.
It's true. No, it's true. And they don't even really want to, I think, hear about it to some extent. And in fact, even the PCI Council, who does the governance over this, even tried to come out with, you know, some slides and training to help socialize better with the small businesses to basically say, hey, you guys are doing this too. You need to be aware of some of these things. And I think it's good, obviously, as a good business owner, you know, being able to provide, you know, more information out there is really, you know, the way to go. But at the same time, you're right. They just want to run their business, right? They don't want to worry about checking boxes.
Yeah, but those same businesses are at the most at risk of going out of business. Agreed. If they have a breach, because once you get breached, there's
done.
Remediation. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, right. The public file. You know, a Target or anybody else can bounce back from this and they write it off and say, hey, you know what?
You're absolutely
IT department,
right.
You got a new budget. The car dealership down the street or whatever it may be, they get hacked. Retail outlet, small business, they get hacked. I mean, it's like 85%, 95% of them. If the full hatchet comes down where they failed all along the way, they're basically out of business.
Right. And the estimated cost typically to some of these organizations after a breach occurs is huge. Mm-hmm. And they can get insurance for it, but typically it's capped around $100,000. And you guys know getting in security investigator firm, it's gone the second they hit the door,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so
for
it's
sure.
gone.
They're gonna take it all.
So yeah, there's no middle room almost in some of that space too.
Well, you almost feel bad too, because a lot of times they're being directed because the bank above them that's issuing the machines, and again, we're talking more about the physical transactions, they go to fill out the self-assessment questionnaire, which is 10 to 15 questions. And I remember when PCI, you know, I used to work with different businesses on this. Their banks were just telling them, just fill it out until it says you passed.
Just check the box.
Just check the box until you passed. And they had no idea. Well, what that really meant was if you were hacked, there would be an investigation. It would go up to the bank, and the bank would say, well, we're clean here. And then it'd go up to the issuer. They'd say, we're clean, and come back down the chain, and the lowest man on the totem pole gets caught holding the bag there.
Right. So what I'd like to talk to you about, Rachel, a little bit is let's assume then for a minute that we are that organization that has either chosen to take on that burden or that responsibility of maintaining our own transactions. Some data is going to be on-prem or at least in a storage area, either in the cloud, on-prem, or as a service or as a platform where there's going to be some PCI data coming in contact with us, right? So, excuse me, as you know, PCI DSS standard has changed dramatically. So we're at 3X now, and I'm sure there's going to be more and more of those. But the last few changes I thought, sorry about that. The last few changes I thought were the most significant in that the approach to you being able to do your own self-assessment completely, they removed a few components that I thought were kind of critical. I wanted to get your stance on this coming from the organization that you work for is, the requirements for vulnerability assessments, penetration testing, and then also QSAs and their role in this whole process. If people don't understand what a QSA is, that qualified security assessor basically is a third party. There are organizations out there that are certified to be a QSA. They have to go through a rigid set of standards and testing and certifications, and then you would pay them to come in, certify a self-assessment, or their environment as regards to PCI, and then put a stamp on it basically saying that QSA third party has authorized this, but then another company having to come in and then do a vulnerability assessment and pen test on certain segments of the network, if that applied to you as a card holder or data or a holder of card holder data. So I know it was a lot. My question is this: is how do you see that that change? Did that affect you in your day to day, as far as the VAs, the pen tests, and what did you guys do, or how did you adjust to that that requirement? Did that impact you at all?
So, how do I describe? So actually, EMV brought a bunch to the table.
Okay.
So in storefronts, when you're out shopping and you notice, obviously, they look for the chip, which is where the EMV comes in, right?
Yeah.
That's where some of the new self-assessments came in recently, because with the new EMV council now that exists, mm-hmm. they're actually allowing some waivers and some self-assessments that you can do based on having an EMV implementation if it's large enough.
Really?
So they're also...
Rachel, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Can you explain EMV to me? I think I was in the back of the class.
Good call. Yeah, and Dan and I will probably run off with terms a bit. Right.
We'll reduce the level of acronym.
TLAs.
We're going to do an RDA, reducing the level of or RLA.
So, TLAs need to be defined for me, please.
So EMV is basically, from a layman's term, is. Basically using the chip on your credit card. Okay.
Gotcha.
So there's actually, you know, Europay, Visa, MasterCard was the original creators of the EMV standard.
Why is that intrinsically more secure than not?
Than a magnetic stripe?
You mean? Yeah.
So,
explain that. Well, please.
Well, it's encrypted, right?
So is a magnetic stripe, though.
There's a couple methodologies that do it, and I think part of it's time.
Okay.
So, like, when magnetic stripe first came out, nobody really knew how to recreate it.
Got it.
So mm-hmm. that was pretty, you know, it's like sort of the evolution of security, right?
Yeah.
Putting up a wall.
Yeah, it really
obscurity.
Is.
Security. Yep,
There's a couple other components, not to get into the complexity of EMV, but there are some in the standard that do help with it. But I think mostly.
Clearly need to do some reading before I ask you for that meeting that we were talking about.
Well, if you're familiar with the exchange of public keys, private keys, and the actual encryption that's baked into the chips themselves.
Got it.
In this case, Gemalto's. Help me out here. Not the
SafeNet.
SafeNet, thank you. They were pretty much the ones that kind of came out.
Don't let it get to your head.
Too late.
Right. So it gets back to that.
Thank you. I digress. I apologize for interrupting.
Making it harder. No, but it is a good point.
So we've seen this EMV council sort of, you know, appear here in the last couple of years also, that has been an interesting play space with the PCI security councils, because they're almost two different organizations, but not, because they're the same, you know.
They're the same people.
They're the same people that created PCI Council in the first place. Mm-hmm. So insert
conspiracy theory here.
Well, here's another question. Isn't PCI...
Now you're talking my language.
The only industry standard that's regulated outside our federal government. So PCI is actually privately kind of ran, whereas like HIPAA and everything else is federally mandated, or some type of government agency pushes into that.
You're right to a large extent, although...
I just heard that you're right.
Although you're wrong.
Although there is a caveat. How about we put it like that?
Yeah.
So your credit card account number is also considered PII under federal standard. Okay. So there is some linkage there, but from a governance standpoint, you're right. It is handled differently. Some states, Nevada and I think Maryland years ago, actually created some state law putting it into
expect
it.
That from Nevada. Well, I guess,
yes,
Nevada.
They do. Especially
Nevada. Which state processes more credit cards per hour than any other state?
Exactly. Yeah. So consumer protection.
A few of those
laws.
Might have been mine.
Majority of those are.
Yes. So to answer your question, yes, and there's some tiebacks. It is more of a civil issue, though, potentially, which is where your point is, than a federal one, but. I don't know. If somebody was going after somebody, I think they could call them on PII, too.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I don't think it'd be too difficult. Yeah.
No, but PII isn't very regulated here in the States, I wouldn't say, either, though.
No.
Not as much as it should be.
Yeah, no. I agree. Yeah. Different segment.
Right. I think GDPR has it right in a lot of ways.
I want to slide a question into here, and it might be a stupid question, but that's what I'm here for. Do you, in terms of securing your infrastructure, what do you guys think of the PCI data security standard? How do you think it compares to some of the other stuff? Do you think that this is just something? I mean, I've often been of the opinion that from a healthcare perspective, you should have great standards in your organization that protect the data anyway, and you should be able to answer the compliance mandate with your current internal standards rather than the other way around, which it seems like it's good. I'm glad that we did this, that we did it this way, but it seems like more and more people are focusing in on trying to figure out how we comply with the standard instead of properly securing data.
No, I think that's a good point. I mean, in particular, a lot of people, when they look at compliance, are we checking the boxes, right? And what's the difference there? So from a general perspective, like with companies, let's say I'm a company that, you know, doesn't even handle, you know, credit cards. Would I even be interested in these standards? And I would say the answer is yes. It's a great baseline effort.
Okay.
You know, type thing. If I have nothing else to go.
What's your favorite one?
What's my favorite one? Oh, gosh.
That's like a
trick. That is a weird question. Do you have a favorite?
Yeah.
Tell me.
I do.
What's yours, Danny Boy?
By industry or just in general across the board?
Just
in general across the board, it's going to be a general injection of SANS 20 or the CSC.
Okay.
Critical security controls or executive order 13636. I know, I'm going to get really, really nerdy right now.
Is that where they kill all the Jedis?
That's just general security 101. Okay. You take your top five of the top 20 CSC controls and you kind of, you know, drill down from there. PCI I like because it focuses on, pardon everybody. A little frog in my throat tonight.
Kermit the Frog.
I've named him Kermit. Where it drills down a little bit deeper on things like encryption and segmentation and making sure that there are virtual or physical air-gapped walls between certain enclaves of your network where they really do need to be separated, which is where I think PCI really brings us a certain level of clarity and high fidelity to your network. So a combination of those, but SANS, if I had to only pick one, it'd be CSC SANS 20, and I still call it the SANS 20 because I'm old school, I'm an old guy. But PCI, if you were to say I've complied 100% and completely with a CSC 20 or SANS 20, then you would have handled about 85%+ of PCI. There's only a few things that really do make you PCI unique in the way that I think some of those controls, to your point, Rachel, are applied. They already exist. You're just going to be a little bit more stringent about them, like obfuscation of data. That's a big one right now for the storage of data. If you do want to take on that burden, you've got a database or you've got a, you know, some sort of repository of information where you are storing PII in some way, shape, or form, you have to obfuscate it. You have to be able to show that you can do that consistently, and that it's encrypted where it needs to be, and you know certain things are segmented where they need to be as well. So. That's my take on it. That's my favorite, but it also how it overlaps with PCI, I guess. Any thoughts on that one?
Well, I can tell you what I don't like about the PCI standard. Okay. And you know, which is sort of funny to come out of the, you know, compliance person sitting here, but I don't like how it's not very risk-based.
Agreed.
It's not business focused. It's not business focused. It's about the technology.
It's just a subset of the business, right? It's just so it is in a way, but it's just a subset of the business. It doesn't really discuss, you know, in terms of, okay, if I have, you know, something over here, like I've obfuscated it, like to your point, or done something over here, does that really, you know, have I taken care of it? Mm-hmm. And PCI just says no, you handled it.
Yeah. Oh, I 100% agree with you.
You know.
And, yeah. It's, and, I think we have to consider the source, though, right? Where did it come from?
True.
Your earlier point.
Yeah.
Right?
No,
They're not – they don't think that way.
Or what have you done to maybe, you know, cause that risk to be so small that it's completely ridiculous to expect somebody to spend a lot of money securing something that – it really isn't. And that was I've seen that back in the day with a lot of places that did, you know, phone ordering. Mm-hmm. So, you know, person called in and wanted to buy, you know, whatever that they saw on TV maybe, you know, and stuff. And that was only a small segment maybe of that phone call. And it wasn't digitized in any way of that, but it didn't matter. It traversed, you know, a bunch of stuff. So it was very much not risk-based at all.
Yeah.
We pulled the Verizon. So Verizon came out with their payment security report. And so there were some interesting numbers in here. They kind of paints exactly what you're saying. So they looked at who was in full compliance. And in 2012, only 11% of companies were at one point in the year. Now, again, I'm going to say at one point in the year, we're at 100% compliance. In 2016, it's just a tinge over 55%. So you say, okay, well, things are getting way better. In that same report, they said later in the year, these companies were retested. 45% of them fell out of compliance within 90 days. Not even 100%, just fell completely out of compliance. And so being 100% compliance and in compliance is really hard. Even staying in some sort of compliance for 90 days is really hard. How do you, from a compliance standpoint, why do you think a lot of these companies, they get to that point and they quickly drop off?
So the thing about PCI to remember is it's all or nothing. You are either compliant with all controls within PCI or you are not. So that number is very polarizing. It's a very polarizing type of standard. So you can pass 99.9% of the controls. If you fail one, you failed your PCI audit. Congratulations. Go back, start over again, do not collect $200 and, you know, that kind of thing. So it's very black or white. It's one of the more stricter ones, which is kind of why I like it, because it's not flexible. I mean, you have to just pass the whole thing, right? So just get ready. You pick the size level merchant you are. Here's the controls within PCI you need to adhere to, and now you have to adhere to those. So it's kind of these numbers are a little misleading. I think they're a little misleading because they don't show, and I know the report you're talking about is, it doesn't show how close the ones that failed were to passing. That's what I would be more interested in. Did you fail 90% and pass 10, or was it the other way around? Or come on, I mean, was it a finding that was something that you had been working on that you had mitigated and you submitted an exception? The nice thing about PCI, and Rachel's nodding yes, and I want to definitely hear your response to this, is because you live this. This is you every single day. There's these beautiful things called exceptions, and you can document those. And with an SAQ form, okay, so the actual self-assessment questionnaire, you get to go through it. And at the end of it, there's this beautiful little section that says, okay, give me all your exceptions. We know you didn't pass 100%. So these 10 areas where we didn't, and here are the reasons why. Here's how we're going to mitigate it, what we're going to do, our plan. Over time, we're going to have these things taken care of, et cetera, et cetera. There's some things that are out of our control, whatever you want to say. You can do that. And that's the beauty of an exception, is you can document that and show the auditors. But and I definitely want to ask you that question, is Rachel, how does that play into your role, you know, in what you do in those exceptions?
No, very much so. So basically what you're discussing is what the council calls, and they came out actually with a template not too long ago. It's called a compensating control. And a compensating control worksheet gets filled out, and that's submitted to the QSA, the auditor. And then he takes a look at it and sort of, you know, I don't know. It can be a little bit of a merit thing, but also if, let's say, your auditor comes back and says to you, nah, this seems weak or something, you can actually, that's when the council actually starts playing a role in some of the businesses, because there have been times over the years, even before I started this current, you know, position, I used to do those, basically write some of these up, is, you know, where we look to the council to sort of make the judgment, not necessarily QSA. And that's a good thing, because obviously then it takes a QSA out of the picture. Mm-hmm. The other thing to remember about that, though, is you can, there's two rules now with that that's come to light in sort of the later versions, which is, one, your compensating control really can't be required somewhere else. So if you're required to have a firewall and you can't meet something else, you can't say, well, the firewall is there because it's already required. You have to actually come up with something else that's a mitigating factor. So especially more in my previous life, that was can be a pretty big thing, because when you're servicing, you know, clients in the industry, they may have some technical, you know, issues that means that they can, or business, you know, drivers, that they can't implement certain things. And as a result, you have to look at it and go, okay, Can we put in some other technology? Can we put in a WAF? Can we put in a, you know, whatever it is to try and bring that forward? So I think with anybody that's working in this, you know, in the PCI realm, is basically what they're doing is not only being ready for the audit, but being ready for, okay, it looks like we have a gap. Here's what, you know, we can present potentially to the auditor, or can we, you know, purchase maybe a product over here or do something extra and try. That's when the thinking out of the box really starts shining.
They said in the same study, a third of the companies that passed wouldn't have passed without a compensating control.
For sure.
So that's a huge amount. I mean, that drives it way down.
But which is interesting, though, because sometimes on that, sometimes the compensating control, I'd argue even potentially even further, because once again, now we're starting to talk risk. And a lot of times if you're coming out of the box with something, it's not a checkbox anymore. So you've maybe even addressed a bigger issue as a result of going down this alternate path. It's sort of ironic in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's one of my favorite ones, as far as a standard, PCI that is. I think it was a necessary thing that we, that it came about. It's designed in essence to protect the consumer at the end of the day, but it's also driven from the credit card companies. So there's a financial investment that they have and a reason for them to protect themselves, right? So it's from wherever it's driven, whatever theory or conspiracy theory or whatever it is you believe in, at the end of the day, it's just a good way to protect the data that, you know, is most sensitive to us as individual consumers, you know, our credit card information. If all companies follow and adhere to these rules, or at least try to, we're better off for having done it. It's hard and it's complicated, and it usually costs a lot of money, and there's lots of, you know, paperwork, and you know, it's a hassle. And I know, Rachel, I'm actually preaching to the choir. This is what you have to deal with every single day. But it's good for consumers.
That's right.
And there's a level of comfort. How much of this do you think in your organization actually translates into brand awareness? And we all assume that, hey, if you're going to take my credit card, well, I assume you're going to take good care of this data. I don't think companies do a good enough job of promoting that as a marketing piece, saying we are compliant. We've gone through the stringent controls and everything else. Maybe it doesn't translate to the common consumer. I don't know.
But no, I think it doesn't. I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, and I mean, I wish it did.
Well, and especially after, you know, some of the major breaches Christmas time not too long ago.
I mean, think about it. Wouldn't it influence your purchasing decisions if you were to go to a physical store? It's like, I've got several big house brands to pick from, okay? One starts with an M, one starts with an H,
I can
one
answer
starts
this
with
question
an L.
Very quickly.
Would
why
you
they don't
pick
do it? Marketing never associates with negative outcomes. And so you would never.
No, we're trying to make a positive.
No, but you would never associate yourself with, you never want to put this company protects you against data because there's your company logo in data breach.
I get it.
All the words in between don't matter.
I get it.
Even just we are PCI compliant, sort of like the safe seal. Seal when you're shopping.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, exactly.
We all would shop more, but the average consumer, they look at it.
No, they go, what is that? Yeah.
I'll give you an example.
I don't want to think about when I swipe my card, is it safe or not?
I'll give you an example. I wouldn't think about going to a garage to have my oil changed or worked on if it didn't have an ASE certified sticker on the window, minimally, at least if it was. Joe Lunchpail's garage in the middle of Podunk nowhere. I'm not going to go there if he doesn't have an ASC.
I love Joe's garage.
Well, okay, let's leave
my guy's big.
That's a good analogy, though,
because we all love Joe. But I mean, I think that's something that now it's 2017, Matt, and I totally understand where you're coming from as a marketing guy. It's a brave new world. Security is an actual big deal right now. It's a huge deal. There's not a single day that goes by that we don't see about it as a consumer. It scares the heck out of me. I didn't start using PayPal until they had dual authentication baked into their application. That's another great example. I didn't use their service until they showed me they were going to be a little bit more diligent about protecting my identity. And then I started using them like crazy. You know, I might be actually, you know, choose to go somewhere else to buy something for a little bit more if I know they're taking better care of my data. I mean, it might become a marketing thing. I don't know. I'm not a marketing guy. But from a consumer's perspective, I feel better about knowing that. I would.
It'd be like buying organic, right?
Yeah.
People pay more for organic.
Yeah, there you go.
Right, exactly. If you can show me exactly how it was sourced, what was grown, everything else. But anyway, sorry, I digress. Before we go down a rabbit hole, Dave.
All right.
So we're going to come back in the next episode. What am I doing? I don't wrap these things up. Matt, yeah. What are we doing?
Sorry, it's wrap it up,
next
Matt.
Segment.
Time for me. My sleeves are rolled up and everything. All right, so.
Fight over there.
Yeah, this is going to end of episode 31, segment 2 with Rachel Snyder. And
Rachel.
So in case you missed the first segment, we covered a couple of different stories. We talked about cryptocurrencies as well as some keyloggers on HP laptops. Mm-hmm. This segment, we talked about PCI compliance. And when we come back, we're going to do an interview with Rachel. So we're going to take a short break, and we'll see you in a little bit.